is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Massachusetts and Evergreen Solar. It was supposed to be a match made in heaven. The year was 2008. Evergreen Solar wanted to build a manufacturing plant in the state. The Patrick administration wanted a marquee green tech firm in its backyard. Evergreen Solar needed money to build. Massachusetts gave it, at least a part of it, to the solar panel manufacturer. Jobs, ancillary businesses, and a burgeoning green tech industry were to follow. Thus began a $58 million story that came to an abrupt end this week when Evergreen Solar announced it is closing the Devens plant and laying off 800 workers there. Well, here with more is WBUR's business and technology reporter, Kurt Nickisch. Kurt, the Evergreen Solar plant opened to great fanfare. Remind us about that.
It was a big new project, sort of a gem of the state's clean tech industry, even though this is kind of a small company as far as like solar technology goes. And the Patrick administration was a big supporter of it. The $58 million in incentives that the state gave was about a third of what it cost to put this whole thing together. So big chunk of money into one technology company. And Patrick was there for the announcement. It was a big hope to do sort of high-tech manufacturing in Devens. And it didn't work out.
It's supposed to be everything, sort of a marquee project of everything that we want in Massachusetts. And as you said, barely 2.5 years later, and now Evergreen Solar is leaving Devens. So what happened?
Well, what happened was the price of the product that they produce, and these are solar panels. At the time when they built the factory, they were going for $4 a watt. And they thought that over time, price would go down so that by 2014, so 3 years from now, they might cost $2 a watt, but they would be able to sort of keep pace with those lower production costs. Well, the fact is there was sort of a glut of supply. Demand has been good here in the U.S., but it's sort of dropped worldwide compared to, you know, the supply that's out there. Basically, it's already down to $2.50, way less than what they thought they'd be getting for what they're making. You know, when you have a big factory like this, you might lose money for a while, but, you know, it's going to cost you more to close a factory, so you just keep going. And there were hints that there were problems there, but I guess they decided they just couldn't afford to stay open anymore.
So you mentioned a glut in supply of solar panels, but where are they coming from?
Well, a lot of it is coming from China. And basically, China put a ton of their stimulus money into funding green energy and energy products. And there's a lot of disappointment at Evergreen Solar that the Obama administration and, you know, the Patrick administration, this was supposed to be a great time for clean energy. They just never saw sort of the same support and the same direction, the same momentum from the U.S. And so there's, you know, there's a lot of disappointment at the company that just, you know, what they thought was going to be a great environment for producing green energy products in America just hasn't panned out the way they thought it would.
And I imagine that there's a lot of disappointment amongst the some 800 employees, I understand, who are working at Evergreen Solar. How are they reacting to the news?
Well, they are pretty crushed because they had been under intense pressure to keep lowering costs. And I talked to Andrew Kenigsberg. He worked in IT for the company, really sort of organizing all these high-tech processes to build the solar panels. And this is what he told me.
There's just not a level playing field for the alternative energy versus the traditional energy markets in this country, or alternative energy in this country versus what's going on in China right now. China's pushing for alternative energy, and we're not.
Kenigsberg doesn't know for sure he's going to lose his job at the end of March when the factory closes, but that's pretty much what he's presuming.
So, Kurt, one of the things that got so many people's attention about Evergreen Solar was the fact that, as you said, Governor Deval Patrick in the state of Massachusetts put in, you know, $58 million to help make this plant happen. The state made a pretty big bet on the success of Evergreen Solar. So is there any way for Massachusetts to recoup its investment?
Part of the agreement of handing these incentives over was for the state to be able to get some of its money back. Of course, they weren't planning on that happening, and neither was Evergreen Solar. But it looks like at this point, the state will get $4 million back out of the $56 million that it put up front. Of course, Evergreen Solar is losing a lot of money, too. It's not like they're running away with $52 million.
Is there any push to maybe not have a similar losing proposition happen again in Massachusetts?
Yeah, from plenty of people in the governor's own party. State Senator Jamie Eldridge is a Democrat. He actually represents this area where this factory went up. And he says this whole system of, you know, trying to pick winners and losers in business just isn't something the state ought to be in.
We really need to take a look at the whole approach in terms of corporate subsidies to attract companies to Massachusetts, whether it's a wise use of taxpayer dollars. And if it is, at the very least, let's make sure we have stronger provisions to get back that money if these companies do not create the jobs they promised to create.
And Eldridge is introducing legislation in the Massachusetts State House to do just that.
Well, WBUR's business and technology reporter, Kurt Nickisch, thank you so much for bringing us the details on this story.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, was Governor Patrick's decision to invest $58 million into one company a wise one? And should the government even be in the role of playing entrepreneur? Joining us on the line to answer some of those questions is Edward Glaser. He is the director of the Rappaport Institute at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. Mr. Glaser, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let me just get your top line thought on what you thought of the Evergreen Solar deal when it was first announced in 2008.
I was skeptical about the deal for three reasons. First of all, as you just suggested, I have a strong wariness about any government's ability to play venture capitalist in these highly volatile, highly confusing areas of change. It's just very hard to pick out which company is really going to be the big success. And many of us think that it would be wiser for the government to be out of that business and to be instead in the business of just trying to create the best, you know, business conditions for all sorts of businesses to grow and prosper. The other two reasons that I was wary was that this specifically targeted manufacturing, which is unlikely to be Massachusetts' comparative advantage. For at one point in time, we were, of course, you know, the manufacturing center of the United States. But for decades, in fact, for over a century, we've been in relative decline as a manufacturing hub. And the reasons for that haven't gone away. We're just a very high-cost place for doing basic manufacturing. And our core comparative advantage is coming up with the new ideas. Indeed, the ideas that lay behind Evergreen were, you know, many of them were actually developed at MIT by a researcher called Emmanuel Sachs. And that's a good business for us to be in, but not actually in the manufacturing, which is just so much cheaper to do elsewhere, such as China. And the third reason I think that I was worried about the Devens project was that, you know, much of Massachusetts' strength comes from this cluster of brilliance that is in Greater Boston and from the close connections that exist there. And Devens is a solid hour drive. So anything that was going to come from the sort of, you know, close combination of smart people learning from each other, that was hard to see how that would work in Devens.
Well, Ed Glaser, let me ask you, I mean, you mentioned that you don't think governments should be in the role of playing venture capitalists, but when you have a government and what I mean here is China being the world's biggest venture capitalist right now and saying we're going to actually create a market for green technology in China. I mean, that's essentially what made the price of solar panels drop some 30% just in 2009 alone. And I mean, Beijing, they announced back then that they were going to invest $3 billion in their own green tech initiative. So how is it that a state like Massachusetts could even hope to compete when you've got the Eastern giant in China really setting the standard for investment in these new industries?
You know, I think it's hard to tell how much of China's low costs have anything to do with government subsidies versus the just much lower cost of labor in that nation. Remember back in the 1980s when Japan was doing so well, there was a big wave that said, look, the reason why Japan is succeeding is because of its industrial policy, because it also picked winners. And it did. It certainly threw a lot of money at individual companies. But when the dust had cleared and researchers were able to look at what Japanese subsidies did, it turned out they were backing losers, not winners, that they were actually no better at this than we were or any other place, and that they were had actually thrown a lot of money after bad producers. Now, they had done well because they had, you know, very, very smart people who were very good at manufacturing things like automobiles, and China will also do well because it has smart people producing, you know, lots of products like solar panels. But the long-run success of China isn't going to come from its subsidies. It's going to come from its skills. And America should be doing more to worry about educating its people and less about subsidizing particularly favored industries or firms.
Mm. So if Massachusetts shouldn't be playing a sort of VC or angel investor in manufacturing companies, as you've said, how is it that then the state could hope to compete in other ways?
Look, the long-run success of Massachusetts, and you know, let's not mistake ourselves, despite the current bad news, Massachusetts has had an extremely successful 30 years. We've really come back from a period of tremendous troubles back in the 1970s, and now the state has the third highest personal incomes in the nation. That reflects the human capital that's here. That reflects the extraordinary wealth of education and smart people, and the fact that by connecting in an area like Greater Boston, each person becomes smarter than they ever would be individually. The best economic development strategy is to attract and train smart people and then to get out of their way. And that requires work, but that work is mostly about making sure that we're investing in skills and making sure we've created a basic environment where smart, young, entrepreneurial people want to come. And that means worrying about the things that keep our housing unaffordable. Mm-hmm. It means worrying about the basic education infrastructure of the state. These are the areas that are most important, not trying to pick which particular entrepreneur is going to be a winner or not.
Well, in just the under a minute we have to go with you, the details of the Evergreen Solar deal, I mean, there is that question of the $58 million that Massachusetts invested. It's part of what's known as a clawback deal, meaning the state can recoup some of the money that it invested in Evergreen Solar. Do you find that such clawback provisions for maybe future deals that the state might underwrite should be even more aggressive, and maybe we should say that we need to recoup most, if not all, of the money we invest in certain companies?
Clawback provisions are certainly a good thing, but the track record of them, they've been going on for decades in Europe and a long time in the U.S. as well. The track record on their actual enforcement is quite weak, in part because when a startup fails, there's just not a lot of money to go for. And, you know, this clawback provision, which actually was a fairly sophisticated one, was presumably the best that Mass Development could get in the original deal with Evergreen. So, you know, it's hard to know how you can say you're going to get tougher clawback provisions without saying what you're going to give up on some other side in order to get the firm to accept them. Mm. So, you know, I'm all for clawback provisions. Let's be smarter about them. Let's be tougher about them. But I think their ability to make targeted local grants to enterprises more successful, I think, is fairly limited.
Edward Glaser, director of the Rappaport Institute at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, one note before we go, some news that's just breaking now. Congressman John Tierney's wife, Patrice, has been sentenced by a federal judge to 30 days in jail for her part in her brother's illegal gambling operation. She was found guilty of aiding and abetting in the filing of false tax returns. Her lawyer says she does not plan to appeal the sentence. Patrice Tierney's brother is still a fugitive from the law. Congressman Tierney was reelected to his North Shore district last November. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Do join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.